1982, fourth biography series. April 5th, 1982, Monday. Okay, these are copy photos that Kurt copied, number one. Now, where is this taken, and if you can guess close to what year?
Oh, this must be in 37. Yeah, it was in 37, I think, because the sidewalk, there was no sidewalk at that time. I remember these old houses right here. That was... I think in 37 we had a new sidewalk on the front street.
Is this by the bank?
That's right on Riverbank, yeah.
Are these houses gone now?
Those cars are gone now. Yeah, they're all torn down and some has been rebuilt around there.
They're torn down just because they were old, or was the bank caving or anything?
No, it was just that torn down because these hot houses came out, you know, and then they were just taking up space around the village.
And this is summertime?
That looks like it's summer, springtime. See, guys never put away their sleighs yet. So usually put it away right after they come back from spring hunting. So this must be pretty early in the spring. The way you see, the yard has never been cleaned yet, or so forth. Right? Yeah. Everybody clean up their yard just about. It's about mid June, maybe. You know, this one. I cannot recognize the guy that's there now.
He's splitting wood,
yeah.
Okay.
And then, look like Joe Weissman, all right. I know this is Joe Weissman's house, this old Marinick's house. This house is torn down and has an elderly house built there.
Oh.
I know.
So that house on the left is Joe Weissman.
Yeah, that's what I think is Joe Weissman's house. Well, this house is gone now. That used to be my uncle Reuben, the one I show you a picture.
Oh, the one on the right. And the one in the middle, is that still?
The one in the middle is my uncle, Nick Nikolai house. That's back on the second street. You used to call it Bachelor Road.
Bachelor Road? Yeah, was it all bachelors?
Yeah, because they were all bachelors up in that road. So they used to call it Bachelor's Road, you know.
Okay, this is number two.
Oh, this is another old picture. Oh, you see that? You see the school building?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you see the bell and the building right there. And this used to be the BIA warehouse. This school, I went to school in this classroom here. It was just a little classroom. I think it was about 24 by 30 when I first went to school.
How many students did they have then?
Well, the most they had was about 20.
Okay, so it was a smaller village then?
But it was really a small village at that time. But in those days, you know, we used to go to school in September. The school started in September. Okay, we'll go to school for about a week, or at least about 2 weeks is the most. And then we'd be all going out to our winter camps. And sometimes they have only about three or four students in the school till December. You know, from September right on to December. And then we'd all come back for Christmas holiday. And then we spent about another week, and then you get vacation for Christmas between and New Year. And then after New Year, then we're all back out in the woods again. You know, because that's only the way our parents used to make our living for us, you know. Most of the time we just live off the country all during that time, because there was no, you get mail service every week, all right, but it was by dog team, you know. And you couldn't get no fresh stuff at, during the winter. Only thing you could get was some dry stuff by mail, came by mail too. Just it's not like now. You could order some.
Was that expensive?
Mail was pretty cheap at that time. It was 3 cents an ounce at that time. Mm-hmm.
So this is the school building you went to. Is that building still here?
No, that building is torn down. I forgot the year when it was torn down. I think it was torn down about 40. No, it was less than, more than that. About 53, I think. I think it was torn down about 53.
So when you went to that school, was that BIA or was it?
It was a BIA. It at BIA that time then.
So is BIA the one that built it, or is that?
No, this used to be an old Army Signal Corps. That was put up before my time, though. You know, they used to have a tower back there, just about right in the middle of the town. Right now, that's where the tower was, and then they used to have a Army Signal Corps during World War I. So didn't know what to do with the building, so they just turned it over to the city for school, and that was only this a building that was available for school anyhow. I do not know when the school started here. I was too young then.
So you don't know if there was school over at the old college?
No, there was no school there that I never heard of. You know, that's 3 miles down here. Okay, how do people move up here? Because there was a trading post just right below this building. And that was only the trading post. There was none down at the old village. So the people just gradually moved up here, you know, closer.
I think you said before it was...
It used to belong to Jim Addison, they say, you know. I never seen him. But I seen a guy that took over after Jim Addison died. It was Adolf Miller. That's the one that's buried right on the bank here.
That was his own store. It wasn't NC Company or anything. It wasn't
no company store. It was just a private owner, a store. Mm.
Okay, and then this photograph number 2, this is in springtime?
This was in the springtime. Yeah, so we... people would volunteer because there was so much drift, you know, on the sidewalk. So, but in mid-April, people would volunteer and clear off the whole walk for snow, just shoveling snow. And most of them just shoveled snow in front of their place. Of course, there was only one street then, you know. It's not like right now, you know, you got streets all over, and then you had to use cat to shovel the snow now. But this was just only one street, but maybe three or four hundred yards of walkway. So it just cleared out so people could walk back and forth. And they do it in purpose for the elderly too, you know, that they cannot walk and then it fall down and, or break their bone somewhere, you know. So they kind of clear off the way. And then the springtime was really always nice weather and everybody enjoy it, you know. And the old people would like to walk, you know, for their exercise. And they had not a place to walk, you know, just on a walkway.
Oh, that was nice. So was it all men who did it? Well,
sometimes the women would help too, but mostly men volunteer to do it. You know, my house was way down here. See where it is. That was only the building that was on the other side of the road. You know, when I first got married, we stayed in there, me and my wife. That was in '46. Okay, in '48, I built a house right behind it. You know, then I left the house just for a warehouse or storage room. And it was up for about 5 years after I. just use it for a storage room. Then I finally decided to tear it apart. I told my wife, well, I'll just tear it apart and use it for wood, and then I just extend my house, you know, because my family was getting big at that time. This must have been taken in. Seems like this was taken before I got married. This must have been taken in 42 or 43. Let me take a look at the closer look. Yeah, this is my brother-in-law, Franklin Madros.
On the right with black pants and white shirt.
Mm-hmm. And this guy said, I cannot recognize this one.
Oh, the one with the
shovel. And this one I couldn't recognize. Who saw that one there? Maybe one of them is me.
That's when you really can't recognize.
Okay, this is number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, on the left is, looks like that's you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is me.
Mm-hmm. And then on the right?
This is my brother-in-law. You know, all the people kind of related to each other in this village. Mm-hmm. You know, he was not really my brother-in-law, but he was married to my cousin. And so that puts him in for my brother-in-law. So he always used to call me his brother-in-law. Anyhow, he was a pretty nice.
What was his name?
Paul Nikolai.
And this looks like it's somewhere a fall time.
This looks like a fall time. Mm-hmm.
And you're right on the bank. Is this right by the building?
That's right on the bank. Yeah, that's probably in front of his place. But there was somebody buried to right on his bank, and right in front of his building. The guy that used to own this store too, before Adolf Miller. I never seen him. You know, but, I don't know why they bury all those traders on the bank here. But the bank had caved in so much, you know, that the cemetery caved in too. I believe this one would done the same thing. I mean, it would fall into the ditch. This one here at this bank over here. Seeing that grave over here? Okay, that's that guy buried somewhere around here on the bank. Okay.
Who decided to bury him there?
Well, his wife decided to bury him there, and of course he had pretty big property. He owns that whole property, and then way up on the other end of the village, steam power sawmill. And then he owned a part of that too up there, and the whole back road where there's a second road now, second street. You know, he used to own all that because he had railroad going up there to haul his lumbers back and forth. Yeah, he had railroad, I mean just a truck, you know, where you can run back and forth. There was no trucks in those days, you know, so he had a hand truck there to roll his plywoods and lumbers, whatever he had up there, you know, rolling back and forth.
Did he sell that wood, or was it just for his own building?
It was just, no, he was selling the lumbers. He had a pretty good sale for the lumbers, you know, and he had quite a few buildings around, you know.
So who would buy lumber?
A different place along the Yukon, you know, they would order some lumbers from him during the summertime.
The people building their houses would use that lumber?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Did they build boats from that lumber?
Yeah, they built boats, caches, and houses. It was quite a pretty big thing around here, you know. Well, if you find a piece of lumber that's drifting down in those days, you know, you got to go pick it up. Make it for your own use. Because I used to do that a lot of times. I used to go along the beach somewhere, you know, with my kicker, and then pick up all the numbers I could find. Because I thought that I'd make use of, because a lumber was very valuable in those days. You cannot go, you know, like now. You could go anywhere and pick up a piece of plywood or lumber right now. In those days, you cannot do it.
You have to whip saw
lumber in order to make a good boat. You know, this with this cut with this sawmill, it wasn't very good because the guys would go get some logs along the river and they probably chop down the first good log they see, long. They chop it down regardless how much knot there is on there. But when you whip saw lumber, you pick out the log you want to use. Because I did that once. Just to try to find out how our parents were doing it, So I went back in the woods and then I cut down an 18-foot log. I mean, I cut it and then I picked out a log that didn't have very much knots on it. And then I hauled it in and I whipsawed it right here on my bank, just try to show the people that young guys, show them how they would make their own things or how we used to do it. So we whipsawed the lumber and then I built the boat.
What year was that you whipsawed the lumber?
I do not know the year because I never keep track of it. I was young. I must have been in my early 40s at that time. And I built the boat. And the boat, I had it for about 16 or 17 years. It was really a good boat. I mean, didn't have no knots. And a boat like that, you have to, like if you pick out a good lock, then a boat would last you a long time. Because where there's knots, on a tree, usually if the boat gets dried, the knots would just come out, But like if you get a good lock and build a good boat, and the most important thing is to take care of it. I used to take care of my sleigh and my canoe or boat really good.
How do you take care of it?
Okay, I keep my sleigh out of the rain, out of the weather. Whenever I get through with it in the springtime, I always hang it up underneath my cache. I'd hang it up upside down, And then my snowshoes the same way. I just put them on top of there, just keep them out of the weather. And then it would last longer if you do. Because like if we get through it and just leave it up there in the grass and what it would do, it would stay wet all summer long. And then in the springtime, in the fall time you want to use it, then you go look for your sleigh and then you find it in the grass and that thing is all wet all summer long and maybe have a hard time to take it out of the grass. Well, anything that's in wet, the wood, in wood, it doesn't last very long. Now, with my boat right now, you see all my boats over there behind my yard? Okay, I got them up the bank. I got them, I don't really put them out of the snow. But before I used to tip my boat, put drums under it, and then put it upside down and try to keep all the water and ice out of it during the winter. In the springtime, it's just dry as this floor, when you tip it back up, and then the boat is ready to be painted over. And then as long as you're painting it every year or twice in the season during the summer, then your boat would last you a mighty long time. A wooden boat would last you a mighty long time. Well, I got a boat that I call a Blue Spark right now. I used to take care of that boat real good. That was the first plyboard boat I had. I never built it. My son built it. And I got the plyboards for him. I got the plyboards, and he said, "Daddy, I want to build that boat." I said, "Fine." I said, "Build it." I said, "I could do it, but I want you to learn." So he took time, build it whenever he's stuck, and then he asked me how I can do this. I keep telling him, he built it. That summer, after he got through building it, so I put it in the water. Well, it was really a light, fast boat. Mm-hmm. So my oldest boy, Francis. So I named it the Blue Spark. Well, now you gotta have names for your boat right now if you have a commercial fishing license, because you gotta put that down on your vessel license too. You know, so I call it the Blue Spark. You know.
It was
fast too. You know, and then it was I painted blue. You know, so I don't remember the year that I built it down. So later on, I got some more plyboard, and then I went to Galena, and then I was wondering but the boat's only 20 feet long, the Blue Spark. And I was wondering how I'm going to haul this 24-foot plyboard down from Galena, you know, because my boat was too small. And so I kept thinking. Pretty soon I began to think, well, it's a marine plyboard. It, as long as it stays in the water, it'll be all right. So I drilled a hole just where I was going to split the 4 feet. The plyboard is four feet wide and 24 feet long. And so I just drilled a hole right in the middle, in the center, about 2 feet center, you know. I tie a string on there and tie it behind my boat, you know, and then they drag it down. And I was really surprised how it stayed right on top of the water. On top was just dry all the way down. You know, just the bottom was, that's all wet. And of course, the plyboard was sliding on top of the water. And a lot of people didn't know that you could have done that instead of using two boats or, you know, to keep your 24-foot plyboard out of the water. And I told him, if it's a marine plyboard, I said, it can be wet or it could be dry, you know. So I brought it down that way, and then after I brought it down here, I put it away, and I tried to keep it out of the weather after that, you know. I put it right against the building and kind of right up, you know. But soon I got son-in-law, and he said, you want to build a boat? Well, I said, I got a plyboard out there. You could build yourself a boat with it. So he built a boat, and he built it for himself.
Which son-in-law
is that? Russ Griffin. He's down at, he's a certified teacher now. He's teaching down at Nikolsky right now. He's got one little daughter, right? Now he's got another baby coming up.
Well, that hauling stuff, that's a problem sometimes, huh? Barge, or
if you
want to, do you have problems sometimes if it's just one piece to get the barge to bring it down?
Or is
the barge filled up?
Well, it's no problem, but it's not like it used to be long ago, you know. The barge used to come down, up and down every 2 weeks. And then you used to carry the mail. But now you get barge in the springtime in June, and then one in September. You'd be lucky if you get one barge in the midsummer, you know, come down the river. So therefore, if you want something right now for your spring fishing, at plyboard, you get it from Fairbanks, you got to make your, you have to put in your, well, it's no problem getting it, but shipping it is a problem right now. And probably 15th of April, on the 25th of April, I think, but they wouldn't accept any more freight, you know, because you gotta make let the barge owner that you got some freight coming in the spring, and then you have to put it in before April 25th. And the same way in summer, in spring, fall time, I mean, you know, in August 25th is the deadline too. You know, you can't ship nothing after the August 15th, unless there's some, like big items, you know, like a car or a pickup or whatever, like plyboard, you know, it's or house material.
So really change with the barges then. Well, what about, I guess there's barges, do they just go as far as Galena? Is that where they go more often?
Well, during the summer, it's that far as it goes. But during ever since that World War II, it began to be like that. I used to work, well, that was my first job on a barge boat that used to go up and down the river. And then you used to make a trip down to Marshall and back to Yanani in 2 weeks. And the army started to get quite a bit of stuff in Galena. So you couldn't make no midsummer runs then. They just decided to make two runs in the season, once in the spring and one in the fall time.
So that first job, how old were you then when you were working on that?
I was 20 years old. I got married when I was 21.
So what steamboat was that you were
on? I was working on a steamer in Anna.
Oh.
They got it up there in Fairbanks right now. Mm-hmm. You know. That was my first job, but I really enjoy the work, you know. Like right now, I'm enjoying my work here in the school as a maintenance man. You know. But it seems like every job that I was on, I was enjoying it, you know. But this one here, I enjoy it more because I'm right at home, and then I'm with my family, part of my family. My family is all my girls, they're all out right now. You know, most of them all married and have some grandchildren now.
Yeah, so before most of your jobs, you had to go somewhere else to work instead of being close to home?
No, I was a trapper, and I used to work. That's where I kind of hurt myself, was trying to make a living for my country, for my family. You know, I got run down with TB in 48, and I thought sure I was going to die then in that 48. Well, I couldn't get up anymore. I had TB. When I went to the hospital in 48, the doctor went to put me to bed, you know. And he said, I had this little spot on my lung. It was just about the size of, a 50 cents piece, you know, how big a 50 cents would be. And then the doctor told me, he said, it's not very deep, he said, and it's not very serious. But you can take the cure if you try. You know, and then I had a family of three at that time already. I had three kids already at that time. And I thought it was better if I go to a hospital and stay there instead of kind of spread that disease to my younger ones, you know. So I stayed in the hospital for 22 months, and I really took the care. You know, I just stayed there. I done everything what the doctor and the nurses told me to do. It's up to you to get cured. They couldn't give me any kinds of treatment. You know, they were thinking about surgery on me, you know, but the spot was too small to do a surgery on it. So they told me, it's up to you to take the cure. It might take a long time or a short while if you try.
Is there any medicine?
Well, they gave me some drug, and then I was allergic to it. They call it an INH. I was allergic to it. So they said, well, there's nothing that they could give me any other kinds of drug. There wasn't very much drug those days for TB, you know. So I just stayed in bed. I stayed in bed for 3 full months, you know. I never get out of bed. I just lay on my back and tried to take all the risks I could take. And I just lay there and never get up. After 3 months, then they took my x-ray, and then they said, well, you had to improve a little bit, but you could get up and get a little exercise. Up, set up, go to the bathroom, go get your own tray. And so I did it, you know, for the next 3 months I did it. And then after, they were taking only our x-rays every 3 months and see if like any TB germs in her sputum, they take that too, you know. But they say it has been negative. You said there was no germs in your sputum all during the time you were in the hospital. And that's why they told me that it was up to me to get cured, you know.
So which hospital were you at?
I was down at the Seward Sanatorium. It was an army hospital. But that's about the first time they ever had a hospital for TB. And they had one down at Mount Edgecombe. But that was full. So they opened up a place that the army used to have down at the sewer. And then later on, about 3-4 months after, no, 6 months after, well, they were using this sewer sanatorium, they call it, in the hospital. They were using it for surgery, you know. So they thought they would have sent me down to Juneau or Sitka, because I didn't have to take any surgery. But I thought that was getting a little too far away from my family, you know. I was already far away from my family, you know. And I thought it was getting a little too far away from my family. So I told the doctor, I said, no. I said, I guess I could take the cure here if I'm going to get cured. I told him, I said, yeah, it's up to you. He said, we just ask you if you want to get transferred, you know. He said, no. He said, well, you know, try to abuck the patient too at that time, you know, because what they were trying to do is try to make the patient happy in order to get well, you know. And that was the most important thing for the patient too. So they let me, after 9 months, then they started letting me walk around and do whatever I want to do. But I was still taking orders from the doctor that what I am supposed to do, you know. And they let me go around and then start to show projector, you know, show movie in every. They had four wards, you know, for men, women, and they were all mixed up. There was two wards for men, two wards for ladies and girls, and one ward for children. Well, they let me go to the children's ward, but these other four wards, I used to wheel around a cart like the one that's got TV set out there. And I used to run around projector and run the movies for those patients.
So you got to know the other patients.
And then I got to know all the patients in the hospital, and then pretty soon they all liked me very much, you know. But you had to get really acquainted with one another, and then the nurses used to tell us to have a pen pal go right to one of the patients, you know, so you'd have somebody to write to or talk to or whatever, you know, go visit whenever you want to. So the nurses used to go deliver our letters for us, you know, to the next patient.
Well, what was that like for you, being away from your family?
It was really hard, you know, but I really loved my family too, you know, but especially my first two. You know, and then I thought, well, it's time to take the cure for them. You know, so I just took it, you know. Even though it was really hard for me, I missed them, but I just tried to keep myself happy, you know.
You were young then.
I was young then, yeah. Yeah, I was young then. But that's where I was going to explain to you. Okay, there's quite a few guys that had died with tuberculosis, a TB in this town. Well, most of them didn't have got no business with the disease, but most of them just overworked themselves. Okay, this is how I found out myself that I overdid myself. Was just trying to make a living for my kids. I had to go out spring hunting for my family, you know. And I know there was a time when I couldn't even lift up my canoe or my walk through a portage. You know, but I just lift that thing up and put it on my shoulder, besides hauling all the ducks and muskrat, whatever I could, and plus my guns. And I had to carry it maybe 100 yards. And sometimes I couldn't even bend down. I just dropped my canoe right off my shoulder. That's how tired I used to get. But that summer I had a hemorrhage. That fall, I had a hemorrhage. You know. And there was some of the guys that did it too. You know, they used to carry their canoes from over on the other side of these hills over west side. You see those hills? They used to carry their canoe over those hills. Mm. And some guys that were stronger, much stronger than me. I mean, more healthier than me, you know. And I stayed with TB, because they all just overworked themselves. And I think about all those things, you know, and find out how those people got tuberculosis. There's some of them just did overdo themselves, overwork themselves. Well, as long as you got little germs in it, then it started to act on you, you know.
Well, it was hard work then, making a living for families, wasn't it? Was it different than now?
Yeah, it's way different now, but you know, in those days where it was really hard. Well, most of our kids, some of them too, you know, a good lack of vitamins or vegetables. You know, that they get sick and then they just die, you know. Well, I didn't want to lose any of my family when I started to have family. So I thought, well, I might as well. Only thing I could think of was just go out and kill something for them every day. You know, if I don't catch anything, I had a fish net across here in the slough, and then I got to go out and catch some fish for them, something fresh. There was no fresh eggs, there was no fresh vegetables, there was no fresh food, but there's something that I could go out and kill for them, you know. So the law didn't stop me. Regardless if there was a game warden in front of me, I'd still kill a moose. That's the way I figured, you know. I'm doing it for my family. I'm not doing it for myself. I just want having healthy kids, and right now I sure have healthy kids. I found out that I have a healthy kids. Out of 11, I never lost any of my kids yet.
And that was a hard one too. A lot of times kids would die.
Yeah, right. Well, I kind of figured all those things out, you know. You know, because there was too many children that are dying, even though. Well, it's just lack of vitamins or lack of food that would do it. You know?
Well, when something like that is pushing you that hard to work, what did you think about when you got sick? And did you worry about your family back here at home?
I worry about my family, but the government was taking care of them. You know, they give them about $30 or $60 a month, you know. And then my wife used to go out. Well, he had a fishnet yet.
They
done for all the people that were sick. And if you were a veteran, then the army would take care of your family and you while you're in the hospital. That's what I found out. I was down at when I was in the Seward sanatorium. I was going to tell you about this a bank over here, you know, where this guy was buried.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was working as well. I tried to help the young generation, and they were having some kind of a program. They called it the Youth Corps program, and it was for kids that wanted to learn how to work while they were young. From what was it, 12 to 16, they first started here. Well, we had about 10 young kids, teenagers that were in town, you know. So I decided I might as well supervise them. So I just volunteer supervise those young generation, you know, tell them how to work. Well, they started out just cleaning up the village, and then cut grass and pick up the trash around town. But that's the way the program started. It wasn't very much a program, but and it was for kids to learn how to work. I mean, learn how to go to work on time and never answer their boss or got no smart remarks, you know. So therefore, second year, I think, or the first year went by pretty smooth. Second year, I started to begin to think a little bit more about it, you know. So we started out with cleaning up, after we got through cleaning up the village, and pretty soon they had a lot of money left over. They didn't know what to do with it. So they told me to hire from 20 years old. So I got 49 kids, I think. 49 kids that started work, you know. Well, I couldn't find job for all of them. So I told them, well, that's why I'm gray, I guess. I started to think a little bit more, you know. So I decided, well, I might as well divide them up into group. So I made six group out of them, you know. I made six group out of them with about 8 or 9 kids in each group. And then I made one boss out of them for the sixth group, you know. And then they... Well, I had one for teaching the kids how to play baseball or some kind of game, you know, on the small kids. And then all the girls started to bake, you know, show one another how to bake. So we didn't rent it, the women's club lent us their building where they had propane stove and was all, you know, that's already to move in, like there was everything in there, all except there was no beddings in there, but yeah, cook stove and cooking utensils in there. And some other boys, I took them back in the woods and then cut out a place for a picnic ground. And just one crew, and then some other crews I turned to haul gravel, you know, and they gravel up the road instead of boardwalks, because the boardwalks were not very good anyhow. Just do with all of them and start a whole gravel with wheelbarrow. And it came out pretty good, and I brought some of them to cemeteries, you know, and cut out the brush at cemeteries and mark all the cemeteries, you know, the ones that I know, you know, them just some of them we got to give names to, you know.
Make up names
for them, yeah. Well, how I got the idea was Father Convert used to tell me. He said he was down around Tenunic for about 6 years, and every time there's lose a family, an elder in town or man with about 4 or 5 children, they got to change the whole name. He said that was their custom, you know. And that when it was time for them to get old age pension or social security, they couldn't find no record of them, because every time they lose one out of the family, they change the whole name, he said. You know. So I decided, well, gee, we gotta find names for these guys, you know. So it was already dead, so we started to give names to some of them, you know. Of course they didn't know when they had died or anything, you know, or how they died or so forth, you know. And that's the time I was going, how I started was I planted some willows along the bank, young willows. Now they're about 2 feet or 18 inches high. Went across the river and dig out some willows. I thought that would help for the bank to cut in more, you know. As long as it had some roots in that ground, I thought they won't cut in anymore. Well, that's what I did over here at this man's, where that bridge is right now. It used to be a low place, but it seemed like it was caving in more every time there was a springtime or heavy rain during the summer. It caved in more and more, and so I decided to cut plant some willows in there. And those willows, they're tall right now, the one we planted, you know. Well, that kind of saved that bank from caving. And most of them was along the bank too, that kind of saved the bank from caving, you know, because the roots was holding the ground together. You know,
that
was the youth core, yeah. And then, where I made mistake though was I planted down too far down. You know, I should have just planted right against the cliff there, where there was nothing but mud. Then it would have saved that bank from caving. Because when I was a kid, the bank used to be about 50 or 60 feet wide, just right above that flagpole. And we used to play football there when I was a kid.